Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. Well, sit back, relax, and be prepared. We're going to be talking baseball in the first half of the program today. My guest is Jeff Fox. He's put out an absolutely awesome book. If you know of anyone that is just an avid fan of this all-American sport, then you should get this for them as a gift, because it is a record of history. History of what? Well, it's about Yankee Stadium, the final game. We're going to be talking about the history of this phenomenal landmark. In fact, before we went on the air, Jeff was telling me how it was called the Cathedral. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks, Donna.
Oh, it's a pleasure having you. Baseball is an all-American game, and your depiction with photography in your book, I wish I were on television show so we could share some of it, it's just marvelous. Now, you are currently the technology editor of Consumer Reports magazine.
That's right.
And you're responsible for the coverage of digital photography, computers, and the Internet, which I'm sure is an ever-expanding level of responsibility. You used to be an investigative reporter at Consumer Reports.
Right.
And you exposed all kinds of stuff regarding financial and automotive areas. And you, in fact, were nominated for the National Magazine Award. You have been involved with software. You have got such a fascinating professional background. But let's touch that soft spot in your heart about baseball. Let's go in to when you first became the avid fan of this game.
And I can certainly remember when it was. It was... Well, really, in 1961, when I first started watching baseball games, and that was, of course, a very historic year in baseball. For those old enough to remember, that was when Roger Maris broke Babe Ruth's home run record. I was about 10, and it was, you know, it was a very exciting year, certainly to become a fan. Me and Yankee Stadium, our history begins the next year. Once I was kind of hooked on the sport. I begged my father to take me to Yankee Stadium, and in the spring of 1962, at the age of 11, my dad and I drove. At that point, we lived in Queens, and we drove to the Bronx. Probably had a brown paper bag lunch. Back then, you could park on the streets,
mm-hmm.
and you know, and just walk up to, you know, as you said, the cathedral. And I was just awestruck. When you would see it as a kid, if you'd only seen it on TV. Seeing in person was really quite it's a memory, and you know, you would never forget.
I can imagine, with all the throngs of the people going in there and the smells and the movement. I mean, Yankee Stadium was just packed with bodies every game.
And the building itself, when we got to the neighborhood, what I couldn't believe, I was a couple of blocks away, was I looked up, and I mentioned this in the book, and in the midst of this whole Bronx neighborhood, I saw the old facade, which at that point was green. And about at that point, it was about 40 years old, 40, 45 years old, and had weathered. And it was like an unreal sight in the middle of, you know, all around there was, you know, the elevated trains and, you know, your typical Bronx neighborhood. And then there was this thing that just you could see sticking out of it that you couldn't mistake what it was.
Mm-hmm.
It was the unmistakable facade of Yankee Stadium.
You have a statement in your book that you really felt, when you went to the final game, that you needed to soak up the neighborhood in all its glory and filth. And I thought, what a statement, because it would never be the same again. History was disappearing, and this icon is going to be they're going to start taking it down, you said, this month.
Right.
So this is something, the closing day was in 2008, and you have in your book, you open it up, you have a picture of the closing day, a picture of your ticket. You also have a picture of the opening day of Yankee Stadium in 1965.
Which by coincidence, is about halfway through the life of the stadium. I am not old enough to have attended the first game, but ironically, I attended opening day just about at the halfway point in the life of the stadium when I was 14.
And you've got this photo at the opening day, 1965. Again, you've got a copy of the ticket. Mickey Mantle is up at bat.
Right. He was my hero when I was a kid. I had the foresight to bring my Brownie camera with me. And the picture you see is made from the actual negative that I've saved all these years. But I, of course, had to have a picture of him hitting, you know, for kids at that time in New York. You know, Mickey Mantle was really like God.
Oh, yes, absolutely. The sports figures at that time, I think it was a little bit different than it is today, but there are still those worshippers of those sports figures, regardless of the field that they're in. But at the time when you were growing up, there wasn't a heck of a lot of competition with baseball. Television had come along. They could finally begin to show some of the games on television. But there was a magic when you went into that stadium. There was a feel. There was an excitement. And I think it was sort of like the old-time circuses. There were smells you expected.
Absolutely.
And the seats. I mean, you went lugging in, like you did, a lunch. Maybe if Mom went with you, she usually had something that you could drink. But there were the guys hawking the hot dogs. There was all of this environment that was there. Was it still there at the last game? Did they still have that going on?
Certainly a different time in history, a different feeling, and it was sort of bittersweet. And I wasn't a kid anymore, and the stadium had changed. What the two had in common was the place and the field. It was the same place where all this history had happened, and so for me, and for I'm sure some of the people who came there, you could almost look past. You know, some of the cosmetic changes that had taken place around us, the giant video scoreboard, the blaring loudspeakers, the rock music. When you went to the stadium in the early 1960s, it was like going to the park.
Mm-hmm.
My memory was of strolling in. There was grass. There were guys running around in the grass, you know, throwing balls around. Guys smoking cigars. No, nothing except maybe or a little very light organ music playing at most, or just quiet. And you could hear guys yelling, you know, hot dogs, cracker jacks, that kind of stuff. And a lot like if you went to a quiet park.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly that aspect, you know, was not really there anymore on the day it closed. You had to hang on to, you know, despite all the changes, the connections. And the field and the place. I was interviewed by USA Today Sports Weekly about this and that. And one of the things I said was, it really does matter where something happens. I mentioned I've been to a number of historic places in my life,
mm-hmm.
and not to get too mystical about it, but when I stood on the beach at Normandy, or in the house where Shakespeare was born. You know, it matters. I mean, that's why you're there. And so being at that field, even when it was closing, even with all of the commercialism, it was plastered with advertising signs and
mm-hmm.
all the noise, it was still the same place where all that stuff happened. There was a connection to the past.
A number of things that have changed through the years with baseball is that unlike years ago, and I had some friends that were really avid fans of baseball, used to be that kids could go up and get autographs. It wasn't a big deal. Today we've got security on everything anymore, and it just seems sort of sterile. But there was a relationship between the audience and the players. When you look back on your days of involvement, you have had such a passion for the game. Where do you think the game has gone awry as far as that interaction with the public, or do you just think it's just the way it is in today's world?
I think it has paralleled the development of our society. in that, you know, once upon a time you turn on TV and there was Uncle Walter Cronkite, you know, talking to you or Huntley Brinkley, and it was a personal relationship. It was what people called a national conversation. It was, you know, people born and who weren't around then may not completely have a feel for the qualitative difference. So I think it's a, you know, I don't think it's all due to baseball. I think that it's part of the society. But, you know, I think as it went along, you know, the business people of, you know, kept finding ways to make more money, and the players, you know, I don't begrudge them the big salaries they get. They're entertainers, and they ought to be highly paid as they are. But as, you know, they became, you know, mega celebrities, and I think back then a celebrity wasn't quite what a celebrity is now.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
You know, you were a celebrity, but more accessible, not as bigger than life.
Mm-hmm.
Now the celebrities are almost abstract figures on screens or on the web or in iconic. Back then, they were still real people. I think, you know, you felt more of a connection to them. So it's interesting because I was just watching some of the that PBS series on baseball. Forget the name of the guy who did it. In the early days of baseball, it was just a game. This is in the 19th century,
mm-hmm.
And it was, in fact, at first the players were insulted when people started saying they'd be paid, and they were playing it for the love of the game, and it was almost like kids in a field.
Mm-hmm.
And then somewhere in the late 19th century, as this thing was documented, the business people started getting involved. They started professionalizing it and charging admission, and that was the start of the process. I mean, I think, you know, it's what's happening now is just another stage in that evolution. But it underwent that change. It started undergoing that change 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is we're seeing like maybe a different stage.
Now at Yankee Stadium, they are going to be tearing it down. They're building a new one.
Well, the new one is built.
Okay.
I've been there a number of times.
What are they going to do with this property?
The property that was used for the new Yankee Stadium used to be a neighborhood park. So they've agreed to, as part of the deal, is to use the property where the old Yankee Stadium was as park with ball fields. I've seen some signs there indicating that they're going to have one baseball field that pretty much is oriented the way, you know, the Yankee Stadium ball field was. At least on the surface, it's going to be returned to the neighborhood and to, you know, local kids and athletes. And I think they are they're building some parking garages underneath.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, it's supposed to be turned into a park.
Well, with your book, again, you've got a lot of wonderful photos in here, and I just think it's fabulous for anyone who is a fan. I think they just will delight in being able to go through it. You talk about the neighborhood. You mentioned it right at the
mm-hmm.
beginning, and you call it the L. It rumbles overhead, as always. And you talk about hot dog vendors, of course, in New York. You want to see them on every corner. What would New York be without your hot dog vendors and the hot nuts vendor and all of these wonderful characters that are on every corner? It's just amazing. It's something that's just magical about it. But you say maybe a lot of the things that have been there, like the souvenir carts and all of this phenomenal flavor of food, smells, and everything else. I bring that up because to me that was very significant when I was in New York visiting, how you had this tremendous, eclectic environment that just grabs you as soon as...
All your senses.
Yeah, right. Madison Square Garden. You stand across from Madison Square Garden, and here's all of this stuff going on. You have 10,000 worlds of activity going on at the same time. It's really amazing. And so here you are with all of these feels that you're trying to convey in your photographs, and you've got one that shows the railroad tracks above, and you mention picture Joba Chamberlain's wheelchair-bound father. His name is Harlan. He was signing autographs. That is quite a thing for him to do.
He was out on the street. I kind of walked all around the stadium because I wanted to, as they said, soak it up and see and take in everything. And I got to this area where this guy, I recognized him because he has been on TV and in the newspapers. And the crowd had gathered around him, and he's wheelchair bound, and he was on the sidewalk outside the stadium, you know, signing autographs. And in a way, it was like the old days.
Mm-hmm.
it was the old fashioned. You know, he was not the player, but still, people, you know, were all drawn to him. There was a crowd around him, and it was nice because it brought back a little feeling of the way he used to be.
One of your photographs made me chuckle as soon as I saw it. There's this great blue sign with white lettering that says in huge letters, "Beware," and that's underlined, "Scalpers sell counterfeit tickets." And
right.
My goodness. It's one of those things you wouldn't think they'd still have enough business to do to be able to do that with all of our technology today. But they're still in business strongly, and they're out there outside here in Seattle at Safeco Field and Quest Field. I mean, we just have all of this activity that goes on, and that even adds a flavor to it.
It's all part and parcel. I felt, in a way, the neighborhood was inseparable from the stadium, which was inseparable from the players in the field. To me, it's all kind of one thing, the inside and the outside. The outside obviously looks very different, and the outside kind of a little bit belongs more to the people. The people are still in kind of control there, and then you get inside, you go through the looking glass, and now you're kind of a visitor almost on someone else's turf. But you know, so there's this relationship. But that's why I walked around the neighborhood, because the neighborhood was part of it. I was at the new stadium recently, and one of the policemen who had also worked in the old stadium said to me, and he was sort of grumbling, a lot of people are grumbling about this fancy new stadium they built, and he said, you know, the old stadium was built, you know, on the backs of the working man. It was built for the working man, by the working man, all through those eras from the 1920s all the way until recently. Ordinary people came there, supported the teams with thick and thin, cheered their hearts out.
Mm-hmm.
And he felt that the new stadium was not built for the working man. He felt a loss, like it had moved a different way with the high ticket prices and the exclusive sections they've built, and they've geared it, you know, more towards a kind of a commercial direction. So yeah, ordinary fans can still come there, but he had a feeling it didn't right now, that it wasn't, and he grumbled about seeing people eating sushi at the new stadium. there's a sushi restaurant, and he just said like, you know, that doesn't belong at a baseball stadium.
No,
his
hot
feeling
dog.
Was it was like yuppies, you know, wherever you imagine yuppies congregating, you know, but at baseball stadiums are. You know, eating sushi just to him was like almost insulting.
Well, he sounds like a dyed-in-the-wool New Yorker. Just
yes.
Someone that really has some very fond memories. But I know always, it seemed like from the stories that I heard from the people that loved the game so much, that they never ate hot dogs at any other time, but by golly, at that game, that's when you did it. It smelled good, it tasted good, and you were there and just having a
well, somehow they taste
time.
Better at the ballpark. It's kind of like the way food tastes at the beach, you know,
mm-hmm.
it somehow has a
it's
different taste.
It's just not that magic. Well, tell us about the final day. What went on? How many people were in the stadium? And how did they handle the crowd? You've got photos here,
mm-hmm.
because in there you say we were pinned more than an hour beneath the stands, and it was hot, and we were glad to finally be out where we could see everything. And here you've got these pictures of these huge crowds of people. They're actually down on the field now. They have it all corded off.
Right.
Tell us
you know, they had decided to do something special for the last game. They had announced on New York radio stations for a couple of days before that if you got there early, they were going to let fans have one last chance to actually walk on the field in their last time that they could visit the stadium. So a lot of people, you know, like me, came early, but you had to get there really early. I mean, first of all, the game was set for either 7 or 8 o'clock. I forget what it was. And I got there at like 2 or something. And there wasn't a lot of instruction when you got there as to how to get on the field. So we went in and you were sort of wound your way around until you thought you found the way to do it, but there were no signs. It's very typical. The old stadium was very chaotic. Mm-hmm. There was often no instructions, no signs. I mean, that was Yankee Stadium, you know, the way it was. And eventually I ended up in a crowd which thought it was in the area where you would get onto the field. At times the authorities kept telling us that to sort of disperse. They weren't going to let us on the field. And as it turned out, they didn't. You'd think if getting there at 2 o'clock for an 8 o'clock game, you'd be early enough to be allowed on the field. But, you know, how they manage things the way they manage things. So I have pictures of some of this. They did let us go into what's known as Monument Park, which is this area where they've got, you know, monuments to some of the departed, you know, Yankee greats.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd been in that before, and I guess it was, you know, it was something, but I had wanted to actually walk on the field one last time. I'd only been on the field once in my life about 10 years before, briefly, in the middle of winter. But so I didn't get to do that. But they made a day of it. I mean, there were a few hours of waiting around, and then they had ceremonies, all kinds of special things that they didn't normally do, displaying, and a lot of this is in the book, displaying the team's first pennant. And they brought back a lot of old-timer and retired Yankees going all the way back to the 60s and even a few from the 50s. And probably the furthest back you go is Yogi Berra, who, God bless him, is still around. And he goes back, I think, to even the late 40s.
Oh, my goodness. How old is Yogi?
I think he's in his 80s now.
He's quoted in so many different ways.
Yes, and he's like, I think, probably the I don't say maybe the oldest living ex-Yankee, but the one who goes back the furthest. And some of them I had not seen. There were some from my childhood who were probably playing in that 1965 game that I photographed when I was 14. Some of them were there. A couple of them were still around, and they were there. And then from some of the other sort of glory years in the 70s, when the team, you know, had a lot of success and championships, and then a lot of the players from the 90s, again, when the team won a lot of championships. And so it was really meaningful to have all these people, to be there with all these people for me, to have all those people there that I'd seen play on that field through all those years. You know, I don't know what just, I don't know if you're consecrating it or something. You're doing something spiritual there to bid it goodbye, to be witness, which is what I was trying to do even in doing
mm-hmm.
the book.
Well, you've done a fabulous job with it.
Thanks.
Now, I noticed with some of the retired players, the older players that were on the field, their uniforms were yellow. So they were actually wearing their old uniforms. They still were fitting into them.
Looks like it. I'm looking at the pictures now myself also. It is possible that the color of the uniform had been changed. They had made some changes over the years, so I'm not sure if it was the original one. I see one of Billy Martin's son wearing a yellow kind of uniform. I don't know if it's his dad's uniform or you know, not quite sure why, but it added another, you know, little texture to the experience.
Now, what surprised me is that in some of your photos with these players that are being honored, there is Helen Hunter. Who's Helen Hunter?
Oh, that's the widow of Catfish Hunter.
Okay.
Or blocking his first name. Jim Catfish Hunter, who was a star pitcher for the Yankees for a while in the 70s, but who passed away a few years ago. In several cases, like Phil Rizzuto or Thurman Munson, they had either spouses or the children of those people represent them, come out sometimes in the parents' uniform. One of the most amazing things was the fact that they located Babe Ruth's 92-year-old daughter, who's still alive.
Oh, for heaven's
And, you'll see it on page 57 of the book here.
Yes, I've got it right in front of me.
As many people who are fans of the game know, Babe Ruth, of course, inaugurated the stadium, I think, with a home run, like on the very first game, and it's called The House That Ruth Built. And so it was kind of apropos that his 92-year-old daughter came out to throw out the ceremonial first pitch. And it was spine-tingling to me to think, Ruth was there in a way. I was witnessing, Ruth closing the stadium in a way. So that was a real surprise.
Well, that's amazing. I mean, to be able to have Babe Ruth's, daughter there, that's great. Now, there's a very powerful photograph that you have, at least I think so, of a fan holding up the American flag, and on the flag in the white strip, he wrote, "We the fans are the house that Ruth built." And he's got the Yankee insignia on his left cheek. It's like a tattoo. And I looked at his cap. He's got the Yankee cap on. Of course, somebody is taking a picture of him on a digital camera. When you think about what we have today and what was in yesteryear, when baseball was really the hot stuff, radio was it. And then television came in. And everything, there's so much going on in today's world. When you did this, you made this wonderful, wonderful book that's just filled with all of this fabulous photography. You even captured the voice of Yankee Stadium, not the voice per se, but his image, Bob Shepard. He sent a video salute. Just think of the technology that has evolved to allow us to do something like this. This is amazing.
Well, the fact that he was there affected me because he'd been the PA announcer since 1951, except, of course, when he was unable and getting older. But which, as I thought back, meant that he actually was a PA announcer the year I was born. When Joe DiMaggio and Mickey Mantle both played together, it was the only year they ever played together, and this guy was actually the PA announcer then, and although he wasn't there in person, his voice still boomed out of the speakers of the stadium that night, the same voice that you'd have heard if you were there, in 1951. Again, this is all about connections, feelings, and coming full circle. Some people, looking at the book, didn't quite get that it's a book of feelings.
Yes,
it's really
it is.
About feelings.
Yes, it is. And I love the photograph that you took of another photographer that was filming on the closing day, three little boys who were out on the field. And I thought, as long as there's an opportunity for baseball and the kids have a chance to play it, they're always going to want to be involved. And I know Little League is around the world, and it's just amazing, but I see these children, and I think the love of sports, I hope it never, ever goes away, because it really is a very important part of life. Now, Jeff, you have a website.
Right.
And it's YankeeStadiumTheFinalGame.com.
Right.
On that, you also have a blog, and you give information on that blog.
Right.
What kind of a response have you been getting to that blog, Jeff?
I get a few comments. It's not visited by millions of people, but the website has a lot more. It has some more sample pictures from the book, a lot more information about the book. On the blog, I decided my blog there was I call it an irreverent commentary about Yankee Land. So I kind of I'm commenting really a reality check. I have pictures of the menus, the $9 beers, and I actually put in some of my receipts from when I went to opening day at the new stadium. I've got the actual offer that was sent to me to buy my own two seats from the old stadium.
They may see you on the Antique Roadshow one day.
Right.
You
well, I'm not going to buy them. They wanted almost $2,000 for these two seats. and I kind of You know, one of the things that happened with the new stadium was that a lot of people who had been there a long time, ticket holders, kind of got pushed out of the better areas of the stadium. And I actually kind of wrote a little letter to the Steinbrenner boys who were now running the team and kind of posed an open question to them, which is, you know, if you wanted to sell me these seats, the least you could have done was offer me decent seats in the new one. And do you really think I want a daily reminder of, like, how badly, you know, you moved me in the new stadium? See, they don't have any connection to people's feelings. On the one hand, they take someone who had been a long fan and had pretty good seats, and they reprice and restructure things so that that person can't afford to be in that kind of location anymore. And then they have the nerve to sort of turn around and try to sell you the seats that you had all those experiences in, you know, for quite a bit of money, and forgetting the fact that maybe if they'd give me a good seat, I might consider this. But seeing those seats would every day be a reminder of the fact that I don't have seats so good anymore.
Well, Jeff, anybody that wants to go and talk with you about those good old days with Yankees,
yeah, come on
Stadium,
there and post
come
comments.
Come on to the
blog.
I'm happy to engage. Go to YankeeStadiumTheFinalGame.com. For those of you that are baseball fans, this is a fabulous book, and it would
I just like
great
to
gift.
Want to say one thing that you can order it at Amazon.com. It's in some bookstores, but probably the easiest way to get it right now is at Amazon.com.
Jeff, thank you for being my guest today. It's a delight talking about
it's
an old
pleasure.
Icon that is really has been loved by many that is going to be torn down. And your photography has been great. This is Donna Siebel. We're going to be taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Siebel. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Siebel's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Siebel's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Siebel and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, ttap.com.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Siebel to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
This is Donna. Oh, gee whiz. You know, talking with Jeff, I was sharing with Seth, one of our people at BBS, when we were off the air. I said, I remember the last baseball game I went to. And I can remember when I was a kid, my dad used to take me to the ball games, and we invariably would sit in front of somebody. I don't know how my dad managed to do this, but it was always, my seat was always in front of the guy that had the great big stogie. I hate cigar smoke, and that's the reason I hate it, because I used to smell it. It just was awful to me. Well, then the last game I ever went to, I digress there for a moment, the last game I ever went to was in California at Dodger Stadium, and no, San Francisco at Candlestick Park, and my husband and I were invited to attend a game. We go there, and it wasn't stogies that I smelled, it was marijuana. Times had definitely changed. So anyway, I just had to share that little bit of trivia with you. And I'm not that old, for heaven's sakes, but my goodness, it's amazing how, again, things have evolved. Things have changed. But when you see a bunch of kids, girls and boys, out playing baseball, it's a terrific game. It really is. It gets them running. It develops all kinds of wonderful muscles in the body, and it is a game of skill, but it should be something kids have fun with, really have fun with. And I know I've done interviews with people that are involved with little leaguers, and it's just amazing how things have evolved with the sport. Meanwhile, Donna Sebo here. Telephone lines are open. Hey, if you'd like to give me a buzz, I'd be delighted to light up your little life with a little bit of insight. How about 888-815-9756? That's 888-815-9756. All I need from you, if you're a first-time caller, is your first name or your initial, and then after that, you're welcome to ask me about anything that you like. Okay, oh, in the interim, I will give you some information about yourself. Again, 888-815-9756. Well, I have a number of different things that I wanted to share with you. By the way, I want to thank those of you who are sending me special stories and information. I really appreciate it. There's a story that crossed my desk that I thought was significant, because I get very weary of people talking about how they don't feel that they can accomplish things, they don't feel they can make a difference in life, and why bother? Well, there was a young woman. Her name was Ramona. She didn't think she'd ever be able to go to college. She is very bright. She had a lot of dreams, but her mom died in a car crash in 2007. Her dad had passed away a few years before that. So she was forced, due to these circumstances, to move in with an aunt who was a nurse assistant, who was raising three of her own children, and of course, this just wasn't going to be financially anything that Ramona could even look at. She just didn't know what to do. Well, there is a man, Claiborne Deming, and this is something that I think is significant. This is a story. I know we've got a caller, but I want to tell you what one man has done that's affected the lives of many. Don't ever think the one person can't make a difference. Let's go to our first caller today. Welcome to the show, first name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Hi, Donna. This is Pat from Connecticut.
Hi, Pat. Where are you in Connecticut?
I'm in New Haven.
In New Haven. Well, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Pat, when I'm looking at you, I'm wanting to say don't be careless in the kitchen. I'm concerned. It seems like you're being distracted, and you may have a skillet on the stove and the oil or fat or something about the skillet getting extremely hot to such a degree that you're not aware that you've left it on as long as you have, and when you go to put something in it, it's just like if it's oil, it's going to splatter all over you. So I want you to be attentive when you're working at the stove. Your mind is just going in all kinds of directions. You're not focusing sometimes. You're getting frustrated, and I want to say center yourself. Be mindfully present with whatever you are doing so that you're not going to have what I'd call a painful accident here. It doesn't have to be a big accident. Why even have it? You don't need to. Just be attentive. Also, your schedule seems to be a little wacky and wild, and I want to say if you have to, figure out things that you can do for yourself that allow you to maybe have that snack or that meal as you want to have it, and it's already ready to go. So if it's maybe having something that you put in the freezer, try to think ahead a little bit, because your schedule is going to stay pretty wacky, and you want to make sure that you don't end up grabbing a bunch of fast food that isn't really what you want to eat, but that you're going to have food that's really going to nourish you in the way that you want. So try to be a little bit more thoughtful about yourself in doing this so that it takes some of the stress off of you. Because you seem to really want to get physically fit. What's on your mind? What would you like to ask me today?
I have to tell you, you're absolutely right. I turned on the smoke alarm this morning as I was cooking.
Oh,
my. I have been careless. And, yes, my schedule is going to be crazy till mid-June. And you're right. I've been trying to figure out what can I make ahead of time so I don't get messed up with diet, which I'm very sensitive to. And, yes, I do want to get into shape. I have a worry about security of home, and I'd love to see if you see me sometime in the near future, either with someone in a home or somehow am finally secure in a home. I'm always sort of feeling like I'm going to be homeless.
Well, I think you need to ask yourself what is triggering this. And the reason I'm saying this to you, Pat, is that I'm not seeing you homeless. And there is something that goes way, way back. Now, what I'm going to say to you is going to sound a little bit off the wall. I don't know if you believe in reincarnation or not, but I do.
Absolutely, yes.
And as I'm looking at you, I am getting a picture of a life. You are a heavyset woman. You are German. I'm not sure of the time frame. You seem to be of the peasant class, and I'm seeing you walking with, I think you were Jewish, you're walking with people, and I'm smelling a fire. I'm just seeing this line of people, and you're in it. You're nondescript. You have literally lost everything. You have stuff on your back. You're shuffling along. It's hard for me to judge your age. I would assume that you would have been in your late 30s, which for whatever this time frame is, would have been old in this time frame I'm looking at. I think this is in France. And I think it might be during the revolution that went on then. And I look at this, and I think what you've got here is a carryover that subconsciously you, and I think you died on the side of a road. And I think you're carrying this within you, within the psyche. And I would like for you to be able to get rid of this. I really mean
yes,
this. Because
me too.
It's undermining you. Now, what I said may not make any sense. It might make sense. All I can tell you is what I'm being shown. I think that there needs to be some kind of a ceremony, if you will, that it's you, and it could be so simple as being by a lake or at the ocean, someplace where you could take maybe some flowers and just have a simple ceremony where you cut the cord of memory that bind you. And I would say whether you would remember this past life experience or not isn't the issue. The issue is you need to cut the cords of memory that keep getting stimulated with this. Because what is happening is that you're buying into this image again and it's sabotaging you. It's like watching an old movie. And it's a horror movie. I can't imagine anything uglier than the devastation of experiencing the loss of everything and being forced because of religion or, you know, race or whatever to move along like a piece of, you know, nothing.
Yes.
And so this is something you need to be able to, I would say, honor and respect that was an experience, but that's not what's going to happen to you because I don't see that happening to you. But, you know,
thank
if you,
you
focus on this enough, Pat, then you're actually going to become a self-fulfilling prophecy, and that's not what
right.
you want. You don't want to go
no.
there.
Right.
So there needs to be some kind of a ceremony for release.
Okay.
And let's release this, and let's open up instead the options and the opportunities for you to be in a home that would be of your desire. And I'd say sit down and make a picture of the home. Do a visual of the type of home you would like. If you need to cut things out of magazines, put it up in front of you. And just know you do not need to repeat that experience.
Okay.
Am I making sense?
What you're saying really relates. I can relate to the descriptions that you're giving as far as being German and on the road. And actually a painting caught my eye of a woman that was homeless on the road with an angel over her of death that really got to me. So you're describing something that, yes, I do believe I've experienced. And thank you so much for telling me to get flowers. I think that will help me to sort of believe that I'm really able to make this happen.
Oh, yes. It's just allowing it to come to you. It's not even making it. It's creating the opportunity so that it can come into your life. Because when you have this kind of subliminal programming, you sabotage yourself. You want to no longer have that.
Right.
And you want to be able to see it going away. You're more than welcome, dear. I have to go. I've got to go on break.
Thank you.
You are welcome, Pat. Good fortune to you. And a new home will come in the picture. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Would you like to call in and chat with me? Here's the number, 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Enter the magical world of God's Kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown-red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.DelphiInternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. Before I finish the story on Claiborne Deming, I want to let those of you listening know that I'm going to be on Achieve Radio with Monique Chapman next Tuesday from 5 to 7 Pacific Time. This is on AchieveRadio.com. You can also go to her website, Walking with Spirit. This is the third time that I have been able to be on with Monique. I've known her for years, and we have a great time interacting with people. So that's Tuesday, June the 9th, that I'll be on her show from 5 to 7 p.m. And tomorrow we're going to be talking about U-turns. Well, we've all done them when we drive, but what about doing it with your life? What can you do if you find you're at a point and you know you need to make a shift? How do you make that U-E? Well, Dr. Nancy Irwin will have some wonderful suggestions for us, and I invite you to tell your friends and have them come along. We've got so many wonderful guests this month, and it's just a delight to be able to share it. Remember, you can go into bbsradio.com, go into the Donna Sebo Show section, and you will find, you can find a listing of all the guests that are going to be coming up. So I don't want you to miss anything, and if you should happen to miss a show that you would like to hear, then just go into the archives. It's that simple, and we're delighted to provide that to you. I was talking about this young girl, Ramona. She's 18 years old. She did not have any way, as far as she was concerned, of being able to go to college because of family circumstances. Well, there's a Murphy Oil Company. It was a family-built Fortune 500 company. It's based in El Dorado, Arkansas. And there was a pledge made by Claiborne Deming that he would pay college tuition for nearly every student in his town for the next 20 years. Now, this was made public knowledge. And Ramona, when she found out about it, she's graduating from her school pretty soon and wants to major in engineering at a particular university this fall. She said, wow, I can hardly believe my good fortune. I am so grateful for this. Now, it's called the El Dorado Promise, and there's a website called Eldo, let me spell it out, E-L-D-O-R-A-D-O promise.com. And it's been changing the lives of prospective college students incredibly. In the second year of this program, 312 students are attending college on a $2.1 million grant of Murphy Oil Funds. It's also making a difference in this southern Arkansas town of 20,000 because people are coming back. That's right. Since 2007, school enrollment has increased, reversing a 20-year decline, and 95% of the seniors of this year's class say that they plan to go to college, which is a huge, huge leap from the 60% rate that was standard for years. Also, people in the community have a sense of pride. Tough economy? Yes, they're experiencing it just like the rest of us are. But the residents approved tax hikes to finance a new high school and to promote economic development. And one of the counselors at the local high school said their community had been down for so many years that this one man's promise has given us something to be proud of. Now, Claiborne Deming is 54 years old. He just recently retired as the CEO and president of his company, and he has been watching his community for a good deal of time. He saw businesses leaving, population was in decline, young people didn't want to stay there was nothing for them to stay for. So he said to himself, it's going to take something pretty bold to pick the area up. So his bold plan is this. He created a $50 million endowment to cover tuition for a generation of students. He announced the plan on January 22, 2007, before a packed auditorium at the high school. Any student, regardless of grade point average, was eligible for money to cover freshman year, but would need to maintain a 2.0 GPA to retain their eligibility. People just were stunned. There wasn't any response to what he said. The students, though, said most of us were going to try as hard as we could to go to college. One of them is a senior, Trey O'Shea. She's going to be attending a particular university this coming fall. But all of us have been inspired. No ifs, ands, or buts. We have a chance to go to school. You know, Graduating from high school for a lot of these young people is a real big deal because many of their parents didn't. Now they have a chance to go to college. All because one man said, I can make a difference. And not only did he put up the money, but he set the standards, and the students are standing up to that, and they're saying, we will make you proud, and they're doing that. Congratulations, Mr. Deming. You're an exceptional man, and the El Dorado Promise, if you want to find out more about it, is ELDORADOPROMISE.com. Fascinating information. It's a great way to make a difference. Donna Sebo here. We're out of time. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Make a U-turn. We'll find out tomorrow. Same time, same place. Right here. Wherever you are, enjoy yourself. Be happy. Be sassy. Be proud. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.